Welcome to this podcast episode from the Oxford Dictionary of National Biography, published by Oxford University Press. This week, we present the story of a national icon, Britannia, who in many forms has represented Britain and the British people from the Romans to the 21st century. Having listened to this life of Britannia, why not visit the dictionary online at oxforddnb.com? The Oxford DNB includes biographies of 57,500 people who shaped British history worldwide. The complete Oxford DNB is now freely available online at home via nearly every public library in the United Kingdom and many others worldwide. Further details are available at oxforddnb.com. Britannia, emblem of empire and patriotic icon. Written by Virginia Hewitt. Britannia is by origin a child of Rome, representing a distant outpost of the Roman Empire. Her earliest known appearances did not augur well for her future. Rock reliefs in southwest Turkey, dating to the 1st century AD, illustrate the conquest of Britain with scenes of the Emperor Claudius overpowering a distraught Britannia. Dressed as an Amazon, one breast bared, she is forced to the ground as Claudius grabs her hair and raises his arms to strike her. However, in the following century, she was shown in a more positive light as part of a series minted in Rome during Emperor Hadrian's reign, personifying the territories of the empire. This was Britannia's first appearance on currency, laying the foundation for a long tradition. Seated on rocks, she leans her bare head on her hand and is armed with a spear and large shield with a spike in the centre. Some commentators have interpreted her bowed head as sorrow at her subjugation to Rome. But in Hadrian's view of empire, regions were not slaves, but faithful satellites of Rome. And indeed, on these coins, Britannia appears to be vigilant, armed, and secure on her rocky ground, characteristics which remain central to her character. Some coins of Antoninus Pius, Hadrian's successor, appear to show her downcast and dejected, acknowledgement perhaps of Rome's aggression in crushing native uprisings. But this is not typical. Generally, she maintains her watchful stance. These early sightings of Britannia have been associated with the Celtic deity Brigantia, seen in a stone relief from a Roman site in Dumfriesshire. But her lineage may be traced even further back to the Greek goddess Pallas Athene, warrior queen, guardian, and giver of wise counsel, qualities subsequently ascribed to the Roman goddess Minerva. In later manifestations, Britannia is frequently shown with Athene's warrior attributes, crested helmet, breastplate, spear, and shield. But she is also depicted as a peaceable figure, bareheaded and holding an olive branch. Often she is summoned to be the champion of heroes, protector of cities, and keeper of the nation's conscience, reflecting the polarity of Athene's nature, action and contemplation, strength and compassion. More rarely, she may reveal her wilder aspect, complete with Gorgon's head, or hint at the archetypal female, mysterious source of fertility and nourishment. After her first appearance in the Roman world, Britannia did not re-emerge until the late 16th century. In 1577, in the symbolic frontispiece of his The Perfect Art of Navigation, John Dee included a small figure of Britannia kneeling by the shore, beseeching Elizabeth I, seated in a ship, to protect her empire by strengthening her navy. Here Britannia is clearly enthralled to her glorious monarch. But later images may also be seen as a legacy of the Elizabethan age, widely regarded as a period of Renaissance inspiring classical ideals, national expansion, and naval triumph, exemplified by the defeat of the Spanish Armada. Elizabeth's long rule may also have encouraged representation of the nation by a female figure after her death. The Union of the Crowns in 1603, by which James VI and I proclaimed himself King of Great Britain, may have inspired new expressions of national imagery, among them the Union Flag, which first appeared in 1606. Some early 17th century manifestations of Britannia referred back to her Roman origins, but made it clear that she now assumed a position of authority, not of subjugation. Thus, in 1612, Henry Peacham's Book of Emblems, Minerva Britannia, displayed her standing on a shore repelling a Roman ship. The accompanying verse describes how once she was a Roman captive, but now Rome stands in awe of her. Later in the 17th century, John Rertier began a long tradition of medallic art, featuring Britannia as the guardian of her kingdom. His medals celebrating naval victories and the Treaty of Breda, signed between England and the Netherlands in 1667. They depicted Britannia seated at the foot of a rock, surveying her fleets at sea. In one, she is crowned with laurel by two genii. This association drew on the myth that Neptune had surrendered his sovereignty of the sea to Britannia, who in succeeding centuries have since been regularly portrayed seated by the shore, admiring her navy, guiding seaborne trade, and above all, holding a trident, even when standing on dry land. On occasions, she has even appeared exuberantly riding the waves in a shell chariot drawn by seahorses, sometimes indeed with Neptune as her companion. Here again is a link with Pallas Athene, believed in Greek myth to have built the first ship. In 1672, Britannia received official status, being placed on the back of copper coins of Charles II. Designed by Rertier, the coins were clearly derived from Roman prototypes, showing Britannia seated on a globe with spear and shield. However, her profile resembles that on Rertier's earlier medals, which was reputed, not least from a reference by Samuel Pepys, to be that of the king's alleged mistress, Frances Teresa Stuart, later Duchess of Lennox and Richmond. Opinion has since been divided as to whether the similarity was intentional, though certainly the features and hairstyle of this Britannia bear comparison with Rertier's elegant bust of Stuart on a portrait medal. In 1694, the newly founded Bank of England chose Britannia for its seal and placed her on all its notes. From these beginnings, Britannia became a constant feature on money, so consolidating her role in daily life as a symbol of authority. In the 18th century, Britannia combined her official role with less formal public appearances, as she was swept up in the fervour of popular nationalism, rousingly articulated in Thomas Arne's setting of James Thomson's song Rule Britannia, published in 1740. In prints and broadsheets, she was invoked as mentor to the sovereign and the British people, victorious wager of war, and patron of the resulting peace and prosperity. On a medal by Thomas Pingo, marking George III's accession in 1760, for example, she serenades king and country, playing a tambourine, while her sons and daughters, children of the land, dance round an oak tree. Throughout succeeding reigns, Britannia's allegiance to the throne continued on commemorative medals, showing her attending royal coronations, marriages, births, and funerals. But her protection also extended beyond the monarchy to all her subjects, their welfare and their duty. A print of 1756, for example, shows her with arms outstretched, extolling moral virtue to all classes of society. But such virtue was not always practiced, and 18th century political satires also revealed Britannia beaten and abused, helpless against her many enemies. In such cases, she may have evoked the defeated majesty of the king or the vulnerability of citizens, becoming an emotive vehicle for political protest. Failure to address foreign threats provoked much anger. In Britannia, a poem, written in 1727, James Thomson described his subject as the Queen of Nations, despairing as her feeble sons failed to keep the Spanish at bay, in contrast to earlier naval strength. Similarly, a print of 1757 depicted her tied down and mutilated by the French army, while a 1776 work has a Native American woman threatening Britannia with a tomahawk and knife. Typically, however, Britannia's breast remained sternly encased in armour as she urged her troops to victory. As early as 1682, the Royal Navy gave the name Britannia to a gunship, and during the 1750s she appeared on medals marking successful actions in the Seven Years' War and the naval victories of Admiral Nelson in the 1790s. Just as she gloried in Nelson's conquests, so Britannia shared the nation's sorrow at his death at Trafalgar in 1805. Thus, James Gilray drew Nelson leaning against a weeping Britannia without her helmet, while broadsides described her tears for a darling son, her hero now at rest. Indeed, the growing cult of popular hero worship gave Britannia a spiritual role as the embodiment of national consciousness and mourning. In 1852, on a medal for the death of the Duke of Wellington, she is draped in mourning, leaning her head on her right hand, and attended by her lion, symbol of bravery. In this role, Britannia reached beyond official duty to convey the emotions of the people. Above all, however, the 19th century Britannia presided over a nation made richer by the rewards of trade and empire. Her capitalist role as protector of commerce is exemplified by her many appearances on the nation's money. On Bank of England notes, her pile of coins had been transformed into a beehive, a traditional emblem of industry. She performed a similar function on the notes issued by many hundreds of local banks, serving towns across Victorian Britain. In lending her authority to these private banks, Britannia bestowed upon them desirable classical qualities of wisdom and prudence. She also echoed Athene's role as goddess of the city, thus assuming civic responsibilities as well as her national duties. But there is evidence, too, of a wider ambition, notably the expansion of overseas trade and colonisation. Thus, banks based in British coastal towns frequently depicted her surrounded by cargo with a background of ships at sea. In the colonies themselves, images of Britannia emphasised British imperial supremacy. On notes for Ceylon in the late 1840s, for example, she gestures towards an elephant, palm trees and the sea, symbolising her territory. From 1840, similar imagery was adopted for colonial postage, with vignettes of Britannia, standing aside bales of sugar, adopted for stamps in Trinidad and Barbados, with variations spreading to other colonies. Later depictions also show how the influence of empire was just as strongly felt within Britain. Popular enthusiasm for imperial expansion gave rise to cheap postcard images, combining regality and patriotic verses. Inside theatres, the contralto Clara Butt thrilled audiences by dressing as Britannia for her performances of Land of Hope and Glory, a practice later adopted by others at the last night of the proms. The First World War aroused Britannia's martial character, evident in her defiant stance on new 10-shilling notes and her helmeted head on national savings stamps. But it awakened sorrow too. E. Carter Preston's design for the 800,000 memorial plaques given to the next of kin of all who died in the First World War carried the most poignant and personal image of Britannia in mourning. Her lion beside her, she walks with head bowed, her face sombre, holding out a wreath to honour the fallen. In contrast, during the Second World War, Russell Flint's Britannia for a war savings card was a haughty figure, hand on thigh, as she stamped contemptuously on a crumpled Nazi flag. In 1951, the Festival of Britain had as its symbol a helmeted profile of Britannia surmounting the points of a compass to represent Britain's contribution to civilization. However, with the waning of empire and the weakening of British commercial supremacy, Britannia's role in national life diminished in the second half of the 20th century. She reappears, of course, with every burst of popular patriotism. Thus, a medal commemorating Britain's first referendum on joining the European Union showed a bareheaded figure sitting on a little globe above a map of Europe. As with the empire, so may Europe be viewed comfortably from a superior vantage point. During the Falklands War of 1982, Britannia, as bringer of victory, was, similarly, invoked on medals and a commemorative plate. Politics too may generate contemporary versions of earlier imagery, such as the cartoons and souvenirs marking the Conservatives' three consecutive terms from 1979, with images of Margaret Thatcher as Britannia in a smart blue suit and high heels. In daily life, at the start of the 21st century, Britannia lives on in the name of institutions and businesses, from the once royal yacht to, appropriately, an archaeological journal, a building society, and even a removal firm, which depicts her seated in classical style on the side of its vans. However, at a time when formality is out of fashion, her chivalrous dignity does not sit easily with the youth culture, once dubbed Cool Britannia, but which by its very nature limits her appearance to traditional contexts, such as national currency. On coins, she has changed little, though on modern Bank of England notes, she has moved through different fashions, from the serene, sculptured head of the late 1950s to the demure child Britannia, modelled on the daughter of the artist, Reynolds Stone. Most recent issues of banknotes have reverted to the mid-19th century incarnation by Daniel Maclise, a peaceable, seated figure, bareheaded and holding an olive branch. Today she can also take the form of a reflective foil security feature, now offering practical as well as symbolic guardianship of the nation's wealth. Even allegories, it seems, must work. Over two millennia, Britannia has matured from allegory of a province to spirit of a nation and emblem of empire, variously characterised as subdued or martial, triumphant or compassionate, contemporary or timelessly dignified. Yet as globalisation spreads and debate continues on the nature of Britishness, or whether such an identity even exists, it remains to be seen what part Britannia may play in her country's future. Having listened to the story of Britannia, why not visit the Oxford DNB online at oxforddnb.com? As well as more than 100 free podcast episodes, you'll find life stories of thousands of interesting people who shaped all aspects of British history.